This is Financial Detox, helping you retire with confidence, featuring Jason Labrum, certified financial planner and founder of IDA Wealth, intelligence-driven advisors. For over 20 years, Jason has shown people how to steer clear of toxic advice, achieve financial peace of mind, and manage their wealth for maximum impact. Join Jason and co-host Alex Klingensmith as they simplify the complex, share industry secrets, and provide proven strategies designed to take you from financial insecurity to financial independence. This is Financial Detox. Money.
Hi, welcome to Financial Detox. I'm Jason Labrum with co-host
Alex Smith.
That's me.
It's you.
Hi. And we have producer Monique in the show today. So we're really excited to bring you this show. We've been a little remiss with Financial Detox as we have been super busy and we slowed the show down, Alex. We went to monthly. That's just not enough. The demand is overwhelming for content. So we are going to start working more towards the shorter micro learning, kind of one hit intense shows that will be a little shorter, maybe 12, 15 minutes. So we got producer Monique running the camera today. We want to talk a little bit about Financial Detox just because—
Where did it come from? Who are we and what is this?
What happened? So the Financial Detox team at Intelligence Driven Advisors, right? We are a wealth management firm that operates in a fiduciary capacity, fully obligated to do what is in our clients' best interest all the time while disclosing all conflicts of interest and such. But we wanted to touch more people, right? And I wrote a book in 2018. Oh my gosh, time flies.
Great book.
Called Financial Detox. Yeah. And then I went as a guest on a radio show and started talking about investing and stuff. And at the end, the show host said, you should actually do a show. And like 3 weeks later, we had a Financial Detox show, which is funny.
I think and I was around then. I remember I was like, what are you talking about? What is Financial Detox? What's the difference between Financial Detox and IDA, which is our wealth management? And I think your idea was you wanted to be able to teach what we do to the masses, to everybody. Anyone can do what we do, but not really. And so that's what I think you were trying to accomplish. And so that is the purpose of this show, is to talk about, and you get to know us a little bit and how we think through these things. Like we're going to talk today about the Fed, right? A little bit.
Right. And the point is, it's like, look, if you want to work with us and you want a fiduciary advisor, help you, great. If not, Financial Detox is our consumer education brand, right? Yes. Consumer advocacy brand to help people truly become financially detoxified. Because unfortunately, the truth is, in our education system, we don't learn a lot about finances growing up. And then the media, traditional media that has the talking heads telling you buy, telling you sell, telling you my money's on the side, I'm waiting for things to get better. Just a bunch of bad, toxic information out there. So therefore, the decisions become toxic and people really hurt themselves financially because they don't have the right information or because they're financially not detoxified. So that's what we're doing. We're going for it. Let's talk about the Fed. Lots of action going on. I mean, this is a crazy time in our world, right? Every 3, 4, 5 years, 7 years, we have a bear market. And we're in a bear market. And these are the times that determine whether you're a successful investor or not. We've got the Fed raising rates today, 75 basis points, which—
That'll be our central theme for this show.
Yeah.
That happened today, 75 basis points just a couple hours ago.
Yeah. Right. Raising rates. Why are they raising rates? Why does the Fed raise rates? This is important, right?
I think the answer, in my opinion, is that the Fed is trying to control inflation. So the Fed has only really one trick, and they can talk about what they're going to do, which scares everybody when they just talk.
Yeah.
And then when they actually do something, and this is going to be a leading question in a moment here, when they actually do something, the actions they take are trying to slow inflation so that all of us can afford to just continue to live life.
Right.
Because inflation has been really, really high this past year or two.
Right. Yeah, which is predicated, in our opinion— a lot of this show, by the way, and full disclosure, is opinion. It's not necessarily derived from some concrete data. So we kind of flow with it here and we throw out a lot of opinions and thoughts. But we've had easy money or easy monetary policy since really 2000. Since the original internet bubble burst in 2000, it really picked up in 2008 with the great credit crisis and the great recession.
Cheap money.
Cheap money, was really easy cheap money. Fed lowers rates. They want money to be prevalent and everywhere so that they can stimulate the economy and all of a sudden we get things back on track. Well, they may have gone way too far. There's some great arguments.
We can't even just blame them though. Because when COVID happened, then another government body decided to throw a bunch of trillions of dollars into the system, which might be part of the problem now, right?
I mean, it all is, right? You just can't, it's so fake and so stimulated, right? Money doesn't just, I mean, they do just print it.
I was going to say,
you just print it and you print it and you print it and you give to people and give to people and give to people. Eventually, there's so much money. And then when you add COVID to that, where the production of goods and supplies became limited, right? Because there's less people working. People were staying at home with COVID. They weren't allowed to work. And so now there's less supplies, but there's tons of money chasing not very many supplies. You have an imbalance in the system. So therefore, the price of goods go up. And now we're faced with real deal inflation. Home interest rates now around 6%. They were at 2.75 less than 12 months ago.
Even low. I think even some of my friends locked in or clients locked in even lower than 2.7.
Yeah,
I got 2.7 last February.
Just crazy.
And now it's double that? Hey, have you ever seen the movie A Beautiful Mind?
I have, and I haven't seen it in a long time. It's great. Like one of the greatest movies ever.
It's the guy, the gladiator, Russell Crowe.
Oh, I love Russell.
And he's Nash, you know, Nash Equilibrium, Nash Economics, like that whole concept.
Yeah.
I was talking earlier today with someone about what's going on with why is inflation happening? The same question,
yes.
Right? And amongst our colleagues. And I'm like, I think that movie actually might answer the question.
Time to do it. I did watch a Disney movie last night against my better judgment, though. It was recommended by Andrew Grant.
I love Disney movies.
I'm not a Disney fan, but but the movie was phenomenal.
Terrible.
Miracle on Ice, about the 1980 hockey team, the 1980 U.S. hockey team. What a story. You got to watch the movie.
Did that have a lesson on inflation too, or is this just a
totally unrelated?
That's okay. I should check in.
Direct connection to our conversation at all.
All right. Here's the question I want to tee up on inflation, and there's going to be a point to this. But so I asked the same question and the same colleague. I was talking, I'm like, so the Fed raises interest rates, but the market went up.
Right.
A decent chunk. The NASDAQ was up 4% today or something.
Yeah, big move.
The Dow's 2.5%. The S&P, or maybe the S&P's 2.5%. The Dow's 1 or 2%. Everything's up.
Yeah.
The most it's been up in what seems like forever. And
particularly after they raised rates, then it went up.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think what happened is markets don't like uncertainty.
Yep.
Right. And so there was some apprehension about, well, what if they surprise and raise it, you know, go up 100 basis points versus 75 basis points? You know, what if something else? So I think that once the market realizes, okay, it is what we thought, that amount of uncertainty has gone away. So therefore, the market rallies up. There may have been some other things that rallied it too.
And like when your knee's hurting real bad, so bad that you can barely walk, and you're like, you probably can't sleep and everything you're doing is affected negatively. But then you go to the doctor and they're like, oh, we can fix that. You're like, okay, now I know how bad it is at least, but.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's a path.
6 month treatment plan, a year.
I think that's what happened today is the uncertainty of maybe a bigger raise or some surprise went away. But the problem is, you know, markets on a day-to-day basis, it's just absolutely a waste of time to try and predict or understand why markets are moving on a day-to-day basis. Great to gather information and understand what's going on a global macroeconomic level, which we do, but changing your portfolio dramatically because of short-term movements one way or another in a market is a fool's errand and will almost always result in probably a not very good outcome.
Next question.
Yeah.
Might seem like a tangent, but it's not. It's related to inflation, related to investors, which is what we're talking about here. Get to the point. Bonds just dropped so much this year, earlier this year. Why?
Terrible, right? Second worst start to bonds, second worst 6 month period for bonds ever in the history of the markets.
What was number one, I wonder?
Whoa. I think we're talking about late 70s, early 80s.
Not even 08. 08 wasn't even this bad for
bonds. No, this is the second worst start to bonds ever because as interest rates go up, like, look, if I buy a bond and it's a 10-year bond and it pays me 2%. Interest rates go up, and I bought that bond last year. Interest rates go up a lot, and now a 10-year bond will pay me 4%. Nobody wants my 10-year bond that's only paying 2% that I bought last year. Therefore, the price of it goes down. Good thing about bonds, if you hold it till maturity and the company or the government stays solvent, you will get all your money back and you'll continue to earn the interest that they promised you.
But what if you're like in a bond fund, you don't have that kind of decision making.
If you're in a bond fund, you don't have that decision making. So hopefully the bond manager is holding those bonds until maturity and managing that process. But that's what happens when interest rates go up, bonds go down. So super, super tough environment for bonds. I have a hard time imagining how the environment for bonds gets really good in the near future, but still probably an important part to your portfolio to have, regardless of whether it's terribly attractive right now, and they've been terrible. It's much better to own bonds today than it was 6 months ago. That's for sure, because most of the damage is probably already done.
Right.
Although interest rates are still not high enough in the bonds to really be an attractive, except for some select classes, which we don't want to
get. Well, and also the, you talk about short-term, long-term expectations. The long-term expectations are really what we always want to help people focus back on anyways. And so if the long-term expectations of bonds are to be a dampening factor within volatility, that's still true, isn't it?
That is totally
true. And to beat inflation at the same time, which that may be not true right now.
Some bonds maybe, yeah, but we'll beat inflation somewhat. But you're totally right about why do you even own bonds? If we know that stocks over long periods of time, let's just hypothetically say do 8 to 10% return, and we know the bonds do, let's just say 3 to 5, why would I ever own bonds doing 3 to 5% return if I could own stocks doing 10? Why ever own bonds? The only reason you own bonds in your portfolio is to lessen the volatility, dampen the volatility, as you said, Alex, and smooth out the ride. Also, if you're in all stocks, the potential downside volatility in a given year is maybe 40 or 50%, where in bonds, kind of a worst case year is maybe 10 to 15%. So if you're in a later stage in your life and you're taking income off of your portfolio and it goes down 40%, and you keep taking the same income, you may not recover. That's another reason why people put bonds, as less volatility helps ensure a more sustainable income stream. But and they will have a lower rate of return.
And some people just aren't wired for that kind of emotional instability.
Like that comes with equity.
The roller coaster analogy, right. Like the we used to talk about Legoland versus Magic. I went to Magic Mountain we went to Magic Mountain as a family over Thanksgiving.
Was it awesome?
Last year? We only went on one ride. And it was the Goliath one, which was, the second one, Colossus, sorry. Goliath was too long of a line,
right,
whatever.
Get your roller coaster.
We were there for 4 hours. We did one ride. And but the story is this. It was so scary that, because you do it twice. The first time you go through and then you go back and do it again. And my wife looked over at me after the first time where they kind of pause as you're kind of going up real slow, clicking. Because you have the click noise. Everyone knows click noise as you start to go up and then drop. And
chain
she's
that's
screaming
about to break.
At me, crying like, we're terrible parents. We're the worst parents.
No.
Grady's next to me. And she's like, don't let our son fly off and die. And Harper refused to go on it.
Oh, dear.
Because she saw everyone who got off and was like,
and they were
no chance. Avery and Grady are laughing at poor mom freaking out. So the reason why I tell the story,
pull it together.
She is a bond investor. Yeah. and where Grady and Avery and I are like, bring it on.
Let's go equities.
I trust the way this thing was built.
Yeah.
Because no one's died.
Yeah.
I trust how my portfolio is built. Similar analogy. I'm okay with the double backflips, but Tish, all bonds, no stocks.
All right, we're going to keep her in bonds.
It was so funny.
I want to go, but I want to go on a Tuesday midweek when it's raining, so then I can ride all of them out to wait in line.
And get the fast pass thing.
Yes.
It's totally worth it. Okay. Don't go around Thanksgiving like we did
it. Brutal. Another question we talked about or we received from some clients and whatnot is, what are the best hedges against inflation? We've been asked this question about 452 times this year. It's a great question, though. Best hedges against inflation. Gold can be, commodities can be, real assets in general. So real estate and also higher returning assets. So equities tend to hedge better against inflation because they have a higher rate of return than bonds do. So I personally like private equity, owning private companies through private equity funds and diversified investment strategies. We call those alternative investments because they're not stocks or bonds. They're alternative to traditional stocks and bonds. Also, private real estate, direct ownership in diversified private real estate has done phenomenally well this year, even despite bonds and stocks doing terrible. It's done phenomenally well because if you think about commercial real estate or multifamily or industrial properties, the values are pretty much driven by the rents. And those rents don't, just because we have inflation, those rents don't go away. Those people don't just quit renting them all of a sudden.
They might actually go up.
They might and probably will because they're typically set at automatic increases anyway. Well, so that hedge out that inflation. So real estate is probably the single best hedge against inflation, I would say.
You know what one of our guys told me when I asked this question? Because I'm going around today asking everybody. Yeah. I love getting real feedback real time rather than just reading it, which we do both. But private art is the best performing asset class in the past, I think it was 2 years or something. How much private art do we recommend?
I don't have any private art. Yeah. So it's not my thing. We might need to bring in a private art specialist on our team.
And then the segue to another really buzzword this past few years, at least for sure, is crypto. So same thing. I just checked right before the show started today, but so the markets went up. Fed raised rates, market went up. Remember that? Crypto went up even more. 8%, 9%, whatever. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So Is crypto, here's a question. Is crypto a good hedge against inflation?
Yeah, who knows? I don't think anybody knows about crypto and how it's going to operate over. It's just too new. Interesting blockchain technology, super interesting, could change the world financially or change the world like the internet changed the world. But yet, does anybody own the internet? You own the internet.
Like, Bill Gates own the internet?
You don't own it. Like, you don't have shares in the internet. So having shares in crypto, is that going to be the answer? I don't know. It's certainly an interesting asset class. And there's a lot of youthful people who think they're going to be multi-billionaires because they bought crypto. I wish them the best luck.
Or all their Bitcoin. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
This week, Tesla, they, you know how they bought a bunch of Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Like $1 billion+ of, they sold all their Bitcoin. I think they kept, is it Dogecoin or Dogecoin?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How do you say that one, Monique?
I think that's because Elon Musk actually started that. So producer knows how to, the producer,
Monique, can help us. Dogecoin.
Dogecoin.
Like Deutschmark, kind of like Dogecoin?
Yeah, just call it that. Yeah, that's fine. regardless, is it a good hedge? Don't know. Should you have some of it in your portfolio? If you're young and you want to be speculative with a certain asset class, maybe, yeah. Have some of it in there. I was skiing this winter, late in the season, and I remember sitting there talking to a guy in the line, and he was a young guy who was very confident in himself, and he was convinced that he was going to be a multi-millionaire because, you know, his Bitcoin was going to the moon, as he said.
Yeah, with GameStop.
And I said, how much of your portfolio is in Bitcoin? He's 100%, you know, is in crypto. I buy all kinds of cryptocurrencies, man. I diversified in cryptocurrencies. I said, oh, man, good luck. There's the difference between putting a little bit of money to work in something and in an interesting technology versus slinging your whole portfolio at it.
For another show, we talk about rate of return, financial planning, long-term expectations. For now, we're trying to keep it pointed.
Inflation.
Here's one that kind of brings it home, and this is a really fun one to try and dodge, but like, how's our economy really doing right now? What comes next? What's the outlook, as people say in the industry? Like, there's so many outlooks in here.
Right.
What they're really trying to say is what we think's
what do we think is going to happen? Yeah. I think it's unpredictable, unfortunately, what's going to happen next. Man, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. Everybody knows what those things are. You know, how that plays out. I mean, we have probably the weakest leader of our country we've ever had in the history of the United States of America. It's really scary. And I'm not saying you should be a Republican or a Democrat or anybody's right or wrong there. They're all wrong, probably.
But is that because he fell off his bike?
But the fact of the matter is we have the weakest world leader, and we are the leader of the free world, and it's weaker than it's ever been, ever in the history. There's never been this kind of embarrassment or weakness. And I'm not saying Trump's right. I'm not saying Biden's wrong. It's just weakness. It's just sad. So that's going to affect things like, does China decide to move on Taiwan? You know, why did Russia move when they moved? What happened in Afghanistan? There's so many things, but there's always been, when you look back over the history of investing, there has always been countless reasons. If you look at a big chart, it's like you can't fit in all the reasons why you should never be invested. The bottom line is people are creative, right? We're resourceful and we're going to solve. Things are going to get better. The world's going to get better. The economy is going to continue. People are going to make, companies are going to make products and services and sell those for a profit.
Yep.
So if you diversify appropriately and you have a well-balanced portfolio and you don't act emotionally around the events of today or tomorrow, you're going to have successful outcomes. A highly likely chance, a highly probable chance you're going to have a successful outcome. So that's what we can help you do. And I think it goes into, the last thing I'll be quiet on this, but you know, it's just like alternatives. You have to have asset classes. Crypto is an alternative. Private real estate, private debt. You should be looking towards getting broader diversification than historically standard, because the historically standard stock and bond portfolio 60-40, unfortunately, now proven over the last two recessions, if you look back to the Great Recession and now, bonds are acting like stocks, right? They're kind of moving in lockstep with stocks. So what doesn't move in lockstep with stocks or bonds? What doesn't correlate but still has an attractive return characteristic? That's what you got to start thinking about in your portfolio. Most importantly, as we always say, is tie it to a financial plan. If you don't have a written, documented financial plan and you're not organized, it's probably not going to work out. So you got to start there.
I was thinking about philosophy. So we're working on a course for Financial Detox to help do this in person and with groups of people and whatnot. But the philosophy thing is so critical. When you're talking about the US and the government and how there's always, throughout history, challenges that the leader faces and or capitalism faces and or the parts of the government face or all at the same time, which is what kind of feels like right now, that's what's happening. But I was thinking, I like metaphors, right? So I was thinking of like a metaphor in terms of like how we feel, it's for another show, but a properly diversified portfolio looks, you got to start with philosophy. Like, as an investor, what do I believe in? Otherwise, right. If you don't believe in what you're doing, you shouldn't even be an investor, because then you're just going to be scared and you're going to make mistakes and lose lots of money.
That's a good point. I mean, like, some people don't believe in the stock market. They don't believe in it because they don't understand it. Well, then you probably should not invest in it, because if you do, and then it goes down 25% or 30%, you're going to say, see, I knew it was bad. I don't like it. And then you're going to sell at the bottom. And we've seen that happen before.
Yeah.
So if you don't believe in it or you don't understand it, you probably shouldn't do it.
No. So start with your why. Yeah. Like, figure out what your why is, and then build belief around why. So I'm going to pretend, well, I'm going to give you my why, for example. And I didn't know this until probably maybe when I met you, I started to understand it. And then maybe like only 5 or 6 years ago. And I've been an investor for way longer than that, but I just didn't understand why and what I really believed in. Yeah. But if I believe that there are these forces, this capitalism forces, that actually even this president and or all the government can't control, that gives me a sense of relief around when I don't agree with what the president's doing, because he can't do that much to capitalism, in my opinion.
Right.
He can
it's
do a
much
bunch
bigger
of,
than him.
It's so much bigger than him or her. And then you think about, okay, well, and then there's military. There's also these other government groups, I'll call them, that also don't have to do what the president says necessarily either. And then I compare that to a globally diversified portfolio.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Where even companies are creating products and services around the globe in every different
way. It's the last decade. I was looking at that slide yesterday or today, building that course. Like, there was a 10-year period where the U.S. was actually negative as an investor, where everything else was up. It's like, what happened in that decade? That's when you started
from
in the business.
2000 to 2009, if you were invested in U.S. equities, you were down 10 years later. S&P 500 was a negative 9% return. A globally diversified portfolio was up 60%. It's like technology. Everybody wanted tech 6 months ago before it's down the most. And technology had a 17-year period at the NASDAQ from a peak till it took 17 years for it to get back to that peak. You were negative for 17 years in technology. So you got to be smart. You got to be diversified, and you got to be financially detoxified. So with that, I say we close it out.
Thank you for
tuning in to this episode of Financial Detox. We will try and get you more videos and shows. And you can check us out at financialdetox.com. I'm Jason Labrum.
And I'm Alex Pleansmith.
To learn more about Financial Detox and to get access to today's show notes, transcript, and resources, visit financialdetox.com. Call Jason and the team at Intelligence-Driven Advisors. If you're ready for financial detox and a better tomorrow, call 877-707-8889. Get answers to your questions. That's 877-707-8889. That's financialdetox.com for podcasts and information. And if you like what you've heard, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That way, you'll be notified about upcoming podcasts. You'll take one more step toward financial peace of mind.
This content is provided for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice or recommendations to buy or sell any types of securities. Mr. Labrum and Intelligence Driven Advisors are not responsible for the consequences of any decisions or actions taken as a result of information provided in this program, and do not warrant or guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the information provided. The information discussed today reflects the views of Mr. Labrum and his guests as of the date of the show and are subject to change without notice. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Any forward-looking statements or forecasts are based on assumptions, and actual results may vary from any such statements or forecasts. No reliance should be placed on any statements or forecasts when making an investment decision. Accordingly, listeners should not rely solely on information provided today in making any investment decisions. There is a risk of loss of investing in securities, including the risk of loss of principal. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and there can be no assurance that any specific investment will be profitable or suitable for particular investors, financial situation, or risk tolerance. Asset allocation and portfolio diversification cannot assure or guarantee better performance and cannot eliminate the risk of investment losses.